Okay, we're going to complete the melachos of Mavir and Kibui. A few halachos that are pertinent to either using fire or electrical appliances. First of all, there's a isher in the Rabbanan of leaving alone by oil candlelight. By candlelight that can be what's it called adjusted. That's an oil lamp. Most people today do not have oil lamps. This halacha is therefore pretty much not relevant. You're allowed to read by a candle, a wax candle. That is not usher because people usually don't adjust wax candles to be able to read by them. You're allowed to read by an electric light, even an electric light that has a dimmer. If you had intention to leave that light on at the level that it is to read by. If, however, for instance, you left a light in the hall that's on a dimmer and you didn't intend to read by it, and then your other electricity went off and you have no else place to read except by that hall light, and it wasn't set the chatchila with the das of reading by it, then there's some that hold you can't read by that light. Because since it's something that you can adjust, you didn't intend to adjust it for reading, right? Now we're afraid that you may adjust it for reading, and therefore it's usher. But in all normal cases, even a lamp with a dimmer, an adjustable electric light, you're allowed to read by. Again, it only applies to an oil lamp where you can move the wick up and down and adjust the strength of the flame. That's where it's usher. Even there, if you have more than one candle, you can read by it because we're not afraid you'll adjust it. Or if there's two people together, under certain circumstances, this doesn't apply. But again, it's people don't have these kind of lamps to read by, and it's to a worst degree irrelevant. Using a dishwasher before Shabbos to let run on Shabbos. So here's another halach, and that is anything that makes a lot of noise. The Rabbanan ushered from leaving that on before Shabbos to continue working on Shabbos. It's a special halacha of Avisha Milsa. It was specifically instituted for a mill, that water mill, that worked on its own, but you couldn't set that water mill in action before Shabbos to let it continue on Shabbos because of the noise it made. Any electrical appliance that you can put on a time clock, which makes an inordinate amount of noise, like some dishwashers, you can't put the dishes on a washing machine, you can't leave the clothes in the washing machine, or dishes in a dishwasher before Shabbos, and let it run on Shabbos to be turned off by a Shabbos clock when Shabbos comes, if it makes noise. If it's kind of dishwasher that doesn't make any noise, or a washing machine that doesn't make noise, then it's mutter. You can leave it on from Erev Shabbos, put the clothes in right before Shabbos, and have them wash on Shabbos and turn off with a Shabbos clock. Same thing with the dishwasher. Depends if it makes noise or it doesn't make noise.
What level of noise? A hum cannot be noise.
No, noise that you could hear in another room. Not just where you are, where the thing is. Okay, what else? But however, to put dishes into a dishwasher on Shabbos, usually when you close the door, right, even if it's on a time clock, you activate a switch that later on will permit the thing to go on, even if it doesn't go on right away. But without that switch being activated, it'll never go on. That's awesome. That's Gram Havara, and that's awesome. If you want to use the dishwasher to store kelim, it's not going to go on at all. It's just a storage place. You can put the dishes in the dishwasher on Shabbos with the intention of it, what's it called, being there for Motzei Shabbos, because you need some place to put the dishes. There's no reason why you can't put them right away into the dishwasher rather than put them somewhere else and then put them into the dishwasher. It doesn't involve any more bother. That involves less bother to put them in the dishwasher directly than to put them somewhere else, and then Motzei Shabbos have to put them in the dishwasher.
You're just organizing it?
Organizing it both. It's a
separate
one.
You have to do it, you put it in, no?
No, you don't have to organize it. You put whatever, or you do it the way that there's no border.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you're doing it like laundry on Friday, so you can't put your stuff in the dryer just so it should dry. You're not intending to use it for showers or anything, you just don't want it to get moldy sitting wet in the washing machine. If it's going to still do.
Yeah, if it make the dryers usually make a tremendous amount of noise.
No, I know that. But
yeah.
So you have to make sure that it goes in the dryer so the dryer can shut off.
Before Shabbos.
Before Shabbos, otherwise you can't put it in the dryer.
Right, you can't leave it in the dryer, but the dryer should work on Shabbos, even though you didn't do anything on Shabbos. Dryers make a, unless you have a very quiet dryer. But if you have a dryer that sounds like a dryer I'm familiar with,
what about if you take the dryer away from the house?
What? It doesn't get
noisy.
What if you have earplugs? Yeah.
The dryer will help.
What?
You know
what?
I mean?
What?
What? If there's a buzzing sound when the load is over, just happens just momentarily. Is that included in the noise?
Interesting question. The buzzer that goes off to tell you that it's finished.
Yes, Mama.
I'm not sure. It's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. That's called a Shmos call. But you don't want that buzzer. And it's just very short. Not sure. It's a good question.
You're allowed to use all this stuff on Shabbos? In a muscle case for you.
What? In the what? The clothing?
Yeah, clothing or just washing.
Yeah. They're all using Shabbos. Okay. An air conditioner?
I have some air conditioners. It's just really, really loud.
Kind of like airports. Yeah,
kind of like that. Mistama, you couldn't use such an air conditioner, except air conditioning could be in when it's very hot and you have little children or old people, it could be that it's considered b'makom holy, and then it would be mutter. What's it called? Rav Moshe Feinstein, by the way, happens to hold, and Shabbos is very machmer in many things. He holds you can't put anything but lights on a Shabbos clock. Nothing else. What?
A fridge.
A fridge? I'm not sure if he holds it. You can put a fridge on a Shabbos clock. Also, what's it called? That Shabbos clock can only be used basically for lights, something that's absolutely necessary. That much they will matter. And otherwise, he holds that everybody holds you can use a Shabbos clock, except where it's option milsa, except where it makes a lot of noise.
What
is the
air conditioner? It's primarily
impossible
if you don't have it
on. It depends.
It's
not unbelievable.
Then
that's considered
b'makom choli. It's very... Caravans unbelievable and
the air conditioners
make a lot of noise.
It's not so
bad.
I hear, but it's... Again, if a person will get sick from sleeping and it's extra heat or extra cold, then it's called b'makom choli. Okay. Okay, putting out fires. Where it's sakonis nefoshes, where there's any possible danger to life. Not that you know for sure if you don't put out the fire somebody's going to be killed. You're not sure. It's possible. Then you're allowed to put out the fire normally, and you should put it out. A Jew should put it out immediately. Now that includes where you live in an apartment building. The fire could spread. It's not even a fire. It's smoke. Right, could spread to other apartments where there are children who can't be gotten out or easily, or old people, right, who could succumb to the smoke or whatever. That's called sakonis nefashos. You live in an apartment building, there's a fire that could go out of control. It's not just a very containable fire on something on the table that you could take and put in the sink and let it burn out. But the curtains are on fire, the walls are on fire, whatever, you put it out. Don't think about it twice. Even where it's detached buildings, like here, it's not apartment buildings, but the houses are close to each other, and there's, in the summer, growth around the houses that could spread from one to the other, and there are old people here, and there are infants, and the smoke or the fire could endanger people who can't be easily evacuated. there also, you could imagine that it's a shatik shakonis nefashos. We've had here in the Moshav two fires that I personally put out. One many, many years ago in Pemberton's house. Anybody who knows what I'm talking about is from the old timers. And it was a Friday night in the middle of my drasha. Somehow people make these things stop, got to stop my drasha. I remember some kid coming into the store and saying, Pemberton house on fire. And we all ran, and Lamaisa there was, I think it was a Shemitah year, and it was overgrown all over the homo shop, and there was a real danger that if it would have caught on to the brush or whatever, could have spread from house to house, and the smoke, there were old people, put out the fire. Lamaisa, what's it called, the other one, where was the other one? Where? In Epi's house, right. In any case, so usually, you even if there's no immediate danger to the people in the house, if it's a house fire and there's not houses nearby, then you can assume pretty much there's going to be danger to life. But if it's a contained fire, there's absolutely no danger to life, just danger to property, it's usher to put it out. It's even usher to tell a goy to put it out. You can hint to the goy and say, whoever puts out this fire, you know, will not lose out.
Is mutter for the owner of the property to consider
things? Is it mutter?
What is the case of? Is it because they are called a ball on the mono?
What? That's where it's not sakonis nefashis. All those cases.
Then.
What?
It's not just everybody.
Right, but he can't even tell a goy to do it. Right, so what's a goy? It's only where there's no sakonis. If there's a sakonis, anybody can put it.
Anyway, somebody,
well, the one who can put it out faster should put it out.
Anyway, somebody can make a, like, matan al-manasa after.
What?
Give a matan al-manasa after to, like, the house, you know, like, here, it's yours, you know, now you can do whatever you want to do with it.
No, you can put it out.
Huh.
It's just you're not allowed to tell him to put it out.
But once there's a sakana, then you can do whatever you want to do in the topic. For example, you can call a firefighter.
Right, 100%.
You can call a
firefighter yourself. Right.
You come to phone and make a
right.
Call.
100%. Just like any sakana is precaution. I don't know. If you don't know, most of the time you can't put out the fire yourself. So you have to call the fire department. Yeah, 100%.
If you're the fire department, are you allowed to do other things in the house to get to the fire or
when you'll be in the fire department, you'll learn the halachas of how to be a fireman. We're not teaching firemen here.
You look at the fireman, one of the firemen doesn't speak after the fire is up. He said, can't speak after the enemy kiddush.
Okay, in any case, where there is no sakana. So that's where there's sakana. You put out the fire the best way, fastest way, immediately, and there's nothing to think about. Where there is no sakana, okay? Something gets on the table, starts to burn, and it's not going to spread, and you can't put it out. What you can do is one of the following things. You can pour a liquid other than water, colored liquid, on the tablecloth. Not where it's burning, but around it. So when it'll hit that part, it'll go out. That's called gram kibui. That's mutter for this kind of situation. You can put things with water in them that will burst and put out the fire when it reaches that. You can never pour anything directly on the fire to put it out. But you can do things around the fire that when it hits that, it'll go out. Sand, whatever it may be. That's called gram kibui. That's mutter. You can't pour water on the tablecloth because that's a shriya. That's cleaning the tablecloth. You're not allowed to soak anything in water. But you can mix the water with some colored thing, right? Make tea, coffee, whatever, and pour that on the table. You can take the thing that's burning.
That's if you can do leave one if the thing is burning up anyway.
Because the whole tablecloth's not going to burn. Well, and for that moment, you cleaned it, right? If you're going to get into a fire and your clothes are going to burn next week, you're not allowed to clean them this week. So what difference does it make if it's
right then and there?
Yeah, it's not.
You got a big hole in the tablecloth.
Right. So you clean this part of the tablecloth. You may not need it, right? But it's a what's it called? Maybe a psikresh of the but it's a psikresh. You clean the table. You can also pick up the thing that's burning, right? You can pick it up, obviously pick it up with whatever, and put it into a sink where it won't go out right away, not when the sink is full of water. Put it in the sink and let it burn out in the sink. That's also okay. Or you can put wet rags, again, that you soaked with things in a permissible way, rags or dirty water, whatever, and put them around so when it reaches those things, it'll go out. All of that is gram kiboy, and that's mutter. You're in a room, and somebody left the light on in the room, and you want to have it put off so you can go to sleep. You can hint to a goy to turn off the light, and then you can go to sleep. Because even though you can hint to a goy many things on Shabbos, but you can't have direct enjoyment from the thing he did. Meaning, if you hint to a goy to turn on a light, that in itself may be okay, but you can't use a light. You can't have hanor, direct hanor from that light. So therefore, if there are other lights on, and you could have, with difficulty, done whatever you're doing with the other lights, but now there's more light, that's mutter then to use the extra light for things that you could have done if the light hadn't been put on. But anything you couldn't have done without that extra light, you're not allowed to do with that extra light on Shabbos. Because you're nehenah min aleches akum. You're enjoying the result of what the goy did. Therefore, if let's say it was daytime, the electricity went off, and you asked the goy to turn on the light, I didn't ask him, you hinted to him, it's dark in here, to turn on the light. Now you can use that light, you can use that room because it's daylight for anything you could have done if the light hadn't been put on, even with difficulty. But once it gets to Shabbos Shuvos and it gets dark outside, not yet Shabbos over, but it's still twilight, and you couldn't have read anymore had that light not been put on, you can't read by that light. You can't open a bencher, you can't use the bencher, you can't read the bencher, whatever, and anything similar to that. But turning off a light, you're not in getting enjoyment from the malacha. The malacha's over. The malacha was the kibbutz. Now the darkness is not a direct result of the malacha. The malacha's finished. Therefore, you can be nehenah from the darkness and go to sleep. That's mutter. So if you hint to the goy, you can make use of the darkness. What else? For a cholef, you're allowed to, move candles out of the room. Or you're allowed to tell a goy to move the candles out of the room. If a chola has to sleep, even a chola shein bo sakana. A person, has a flu, and he needs to sleep, and the light is on, you can hint to a goy to turn off the light. You can even tell the goy, you can hint to a goy anytime. You can tell the goy to turn off the light, but so a chola. Makom chola, even a chola shein bo sakana, malacha is mutter through a goy. Another thing, an electric blanket. You're allowed to use only, you can't adjust it, but you can use it. It's not mukzah, or any electrical appliance that you use, like a heater, like a light, right, can be moved around if you need it, right, just as Rav Moshe Feinstein says, it's better to put tape on the plug than the wall, so you don't forget and move it too much and pull it out of the wall. But you should do something, it's a hacker not to pull it out of the wall. Otherwise, you can move it around. You can move a light that has a long cord, you want to move it around, you can move it around, a fan, a heater, any of these things, by moving it, you're not going to put it out. And therefore, it's not mukzah, it is mukzah, but it's mutter l'tzorah gufa makomo, which means you can move it for the say its sake to, what's it called, to move it to where you want it.
My cell phone was plugged in the light of the tablet for a while. I used it at night and found it at the light.
Depends. You know, a cell phone could be mukzah machmas kisorin kis. That you don't use it for other things except as a cell phone.
It's a light.
What? But you don't normally use it as a light.
And
why it has time.
I use it as an alarm.
If you normally use it as a light, you're not so mocked on it not to use it. What? Yeah, then the horror is okay.
Same with an alarm clock.
What?
A clock, and if I use it as an alarm clock, it's a clock, you can pick it up there.
I use it as a clock.
I can pick it up the most at the same time, yeah?
Yes. Okay, a fan. You can move a fan around. There's the fans that oscillate. Move around. But here, what used to be was that since it's only mechanical to make the fan stop oscillating, like it's not, that motor is always there, except if you release it, it moves back and forth. If you don't release it, it doesn't move back and forth. You're not changing anything electrically by taking that stopper out, pulling it out, and letting it oscillate or putting it in. However, somebody once told me that that's not really 100% true, because it does change the voltage something, the current some way in the thing.
Like an elevator.
If it has to move it in another direction, then the current does change. If that's the case, then you should have an oscillating fan set one way and don't change it on Shabbos. I haven't had a chance to check if that's significant, if it really happens or not, but it seems to be like the elevator. And if that's the case, then it's a problem.
So if they had a fan that, you know, you have two strings on both sides, one string stops it, that I heard is still, like, it's a whole different...
A string on both sides?
One string is turning on, one string is actually making it stop, like, stop turning around.
That could be because it's an electric motor that makes it turn. Yeah, that string is a switch. Here we're talking just it's a stopper, mechanically. In other words, when that thing is in, it just stops the gear. And when you release it, you release the gear. But it's always, the current's always going through there. That's not an electric motor. But that's, again, I have to check. If you say that it changes the current, then it could be a problem. Now, even though you're not allowed to use microphones on Shabbos, okay, probably it's an issue of the Rabbanon only, but a person who needs a hearing aid is allowed to wear a hearing aid. There is a Shaila, whether somebody can speak directly into the ear of that person, because it's like speaking into a microphone. But the Lamaisa were Mako, but if somebody's wearing a hearing aid, you don't have to be quiet around him. That would be the opposite purpose of the hearing aid, nobody talks to the guy. Well, if he has a hearing aid, you don't have to talk louder. If you do, you don't need the hearing aid. You can talk to a person who has a hearing aid. He's allowed to wear it because it's the makom holy for him. To go through a Shabbos without being able to hear is considered the makom holy. Right? In fact, they say that the stifler, when he couldn't hear, what's it called, didn't get a hearing aid, the chlal. Because he said, I hold it also to wear on Shabbos. And it would be ridiculous if I could hear the whole week and not hear on Shabbos. So that would be a terrible affront to the Shabbos, so I won't hear the whole week. But in any case, most posts can hold that a person who needs a hearing aid can wear it, can't adjust it, but he can wear it on Shabbos, and he can, what's it called, and you can speak around him, even directly to him, even though you're making use of his hearing aid. There are people who are machmer that if somebody's wearing a hearing aid, you shouldn't speak directly to them. But you can avoid it. Or you can speak in the area, whatever, but directly to them as if you're speaking through their hearing aid, for you is a problem. You is not a makom chol. And therefore the heter may not apply. But others hold no, since it's mutter for him, it's mutter for anybody to speak to him. Because, well, what happens? Nobody speaks to him, right? Then that'll be the exact problem of why he wants to wear the hearing aid. Okay.
When you said before, when you
spoke about heaters. What? You spoke about heaters also.
Yeah.
It can be moved
to move a heater. Why? Because it's thermostat. Every heater has a thermostat. Right.
And if the heater's sitting in the corner over here, it's not going to change right away. It's a little blow heater, a little fan blow heater, like a one-room heater. You pick it up and move it over, it will turn on right away.
Then you can't do that.
I don't think most heaters have a radiator, for sure.
Right?
And
Movable. Oil so that is one thing, but a fan blowing heater?
Or not a fan blowing, the one with the red thing. The red thing.
Right away.
Coils will change right away.
By moving it into
the air,
by the time you put it down, it will
turn
itself
and
put it back on again.
If that's true, then it's awesome. That has nothing to do with the reason we said it's removable. But I can't imagine that that's so sensitive. And that the heat is different where you're moving it, that the temperature is so different in the short distance you can move it.
The problem is the thermostat.
Yeah.
For sure,
the thermostat. Okay, if that's true, then it's awesome. If the thermostat will eventually change it. Right? And even that, it's not a tremendous difference. You just want it a little bit closer to you. Not tremendous temperature difference. If it's not going to change right away, even if it'll change, it's a grammatical integration. Okay. This last thing, and this is the last thing to do with Eastern Malachis, is using Chashmal in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz La'aretz, basically the electric company is run by God. And they're doing it not for Jews, they're doing it for God. Because most of the people who they're producing the electricity is God. So in that kind of situation, a Jew is allowed to be Nehenna when the most of a Goy, since he's not doing it for the Jew, he's doing it for the Goy, and mostly are Goy. In Eretz Yisrael, it's not the case. In Eretz Yisrael, it's Jews, basically, who are running the electric company, and they're doing it mostly for Jews, because people of Israel are mostly Jews. So it's Chilul Shabbos for the sake of Jews. L'chora, it should be awesome. Therefore, to be Nehenna from that electricity. However, most electricity is already automatic. You don't need anybody to do anything. Except when there's a power outage or whatever, then people come and repair or whatever. The heter that most of us rely on, because we don't have generators here, is that since the electricity is also needed, it's all one grid for hospitals, for people who have respirators at home or whatever, you can't be selective and just turn on the hospital electricity or whatever. When you fix the electricity, you're fixing it for everybody. So if it was done, it's mutter even for people who are not a cholish. That's pretty much the heter that we rely on, aside from the fact that the majority of electricity is now automated. However, the Chazon Ish held, not mitzad halach. The Chazon Ish's psak was not mitzad hadin. It's mitzad the Chilul Shabbos. The Chilul Hashem, not Chilul Shabbos. That to use electricity produced by the Jewish state on Shabbos, right, is a Chilul Hashem. And therefore, even if halachically you could find heterim, but it's not mutter to rely on those heterim because of the Chilul Hashem involved. And therefore, many, many people follow the Chazon Ish and held that you have to use either battery-operated things, generators, your own generators, or whatever on Shabbos, which is a big inconvenience for a lot of people. I saw recently that they're thinking now of producing electricity in a way that will be 100% mutter. Mostly automated, whenever there's a problem, it'll be done through Goyim, and there could be that the Chilul Hashem idea won't apply, and halachically it'll be mutter. Everybody will agree it's mutter because of the Pikuach Nefesh involved, and that'll be very nice. Lamaisa, if somebody can afford it, and it's available, probably be an idea to be machmir, not use the regular electricity, to use a generator, whatever. But if that's not shayach, then there's what to be somechan, many poskim that hold that it's okay to use the regular electricity for the reasons that we said. Okay, that finishes that. I just want to start at least the. Maybe we'll go out of order a little bit. And tonight we'll do the Mikvah Eliyahu instead of the Kesar. This letter is long. We mentioned two reasons that were given for the Shoah, again with the caveat of how we're to understand in what context understanding reasons. One of them was the assimilation that was rampant in Europe at the time, and from years before that. And the second was the opportunity to go to Eretz Yisrael that people didn't take advantage of. The Michtam Eliyahu combines both of them, we'll see, in what he says. This will be a second, we went through the, what's it called, the Meshech Chachma. This will be a second perspective, it's very similar. And then we'll go through the Beis HaLevi, which is a third perspective, it's also very similar. That we'll do, we'll start with that next week in Mitzvah Hashem. But let's see the Michtam Eliyahu. He wrote this, I don't know, but close to the war, in the 50s probably. But this is in Tchilat Daled, page 124. We are astounded at the terrible destruction that struck our generation. We ask ourselves, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu let such a thing happen? Why did he do such a thing? So think a little bit, and let's see if we can find a reason why this happened after now. Kol ha-tkufa shekodma l'chorben, hoy sezman ha-kol ha-shibut ha-golos mi'alam Yisrael. 100 years, 200 years before the Holocaust was a time that the Rabbanu Shel Olam was easing the galus off our shoulders. How so? Old with Neimer the Chamishim Shana, are you Klal Yisrael ki Menudim or Metuavim ben Yoshei Teva? Less than 150 years ago, he said, in the beginning of the 1800s, end of the 1700s, Klal Yisrael were shunned by the nations of the world, looked down upon. Only within the last 130 years was there emancipation in various countries. Some countries until the beginning of the 1900s didn't give equal rights to Jews. Many even in the middle of the 1800s. Some already in the end of the 1700s, France, or whatever, or Napoleon, already gave Jews equal rights. But England, I don't think until the middle of the 1800s, what's it called, had equal rights for Jews, officially, on the law books. The kach yischila tkufas emancipatia, uvishonim hachronos kvar yischila ladaber odos Eretz Yisrael, ve'elekshoros nesinasa lano l'makom Moshe v'menucha. And then towards the middle, or the beginning already of the 1900s, the nations of the world were talking about giving Eretz Israel to Klal Israel as a homeland. The Balfour Declaration in 1917, and then later on with the United Nations Peel Commission in the middle of the 1900s. Osam Hagoyim, Asher Milfonim Hoyu Etzlom Lalag, Ubos, Benechshavnu Beinem Ki Bechusim Shebechusim. The same Goyim who looked down upon us and thought us to be the most shuffle, the lowest of the low. And they also believe Eretz Yisrael is the holy land. God put in their heart to have these ideas of giving it as a homeland to the Jewish people, the holy land. Emancipation. The way it's written over here is, you never know that's a word, okay. He says it's clear that the purpose, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned the hearts of the nations to all of a sudden want to give equal rights to Jews, was for a good purpose. That we should be able to prepare for Mashiach, by having the Gaulis lightened, how so? Preparing for Mashiach needs a lot of hachana, a lot of preparation to get ourselves on the right madreka. That, you know, Mashiach may come, but we have to be ready for it. We have to be on the level we're appreciated. So, that we should be on the level where Mashiach can come. So the Rabbanu Shlom prepares us for it. The matzav shel tzoros, tkufos, v'hashpolos, tadirios, einu mesugel lahasogas v'tef t'chaf ali hanidrish. And when people are downtrodden and they have tzoros, it's hard for them to really work on themselves and reach higher levels. It's difficult. Most people don't function well with a lot of tzoros. Nimtza she'orach hadosh hazos v'hakol v'matzavenu bo kedesh nishtavish b'hem l'tzorchei hakdusha. Comes out that God intended us to use this lightening of the load of galus, right, the equal rights, as a means to elevate ourselves, to intensify our kedusha. The kivin shofaklus amatara uv'mokum lahakir is horrendous mamala leiskone v'geula mitov simcha v'archoves hadas ishtamashnu b'matzav hachodesh leisare b'goyim v'lil mod maseyim. Most Jews fail the test. And instead of using it in a positive way, they use the equal rights in a negative way. The Chasam Sofer, when he heard that they were considering giving equal rights to Jews in Europe, cried for two reasons. One, he says, I see that most Jews are going to use it the wrong way. They're going to use it to assimilate. And secondly, if God is trying to make our condition here in Galus comfortable, it's right, he plans to keep us here a long time. And that second thing, the Mechtam Eliyahu disagrees. That the Rabbanu Shalom was easing the Galus so we could use it in a positive way to be ready for the Gaul. Harei ar belonu hasakona yedua shel hachana l'kedusha she'en avoil tachlisa kamo shebi'arni le'el. And that's a very dangerous situation where there is a potential for kedusha and you're not ready for it. That's even worse than there being no potential. Therefore, ze shelo yachur ben ela achshav achshav talicha yisbolus ha yaholich the gober klar zman horoch. I don't know what you call the assimilation started 100 years before the Holocaust. Why did it wait for 100 years? Hu mitnei shakadosh baruch hu marich apel v'eino midas haperonius ela l'achar shenismala hasa. The Rebbe Shem waits, he's patient. He waits till the amount of assimilation is filled, and then he brings the punishment. Doesn't bring it right away. He waits, maybe people do tshuva, maybe things will reverse themselves. V'oz v'ein o tikva sh'hashpa tovi l'dei tikkun. The Rebbe Shem waits to see maybe people will use their free choice and turn things around. V'chein b'motzin v'nikdash rishon sh'omet z'man rav v'adayin hoyu b'asor anisim af la'achar she'hemid Menashe tzelem b'heichol. Menashe put a tzelem in the heichol and the Beis HaMikdash remained for years and years after that with all of its miracles. Because God has patience. And he waits and sees. Maybe things will change. V'im l'achar ha'churban ha'nora mishameshe subo ashuv tkufa shel chesed. And therefore, after the war, he said, if we see that again the Rabbanu Shalom is bringing us chesed, and he's letting us establish ourselves in America, in Eretz Yisrael, and build Torah, and not have that all those Torahs, have friendly Goliaths, then al lanu l'shanos be'lasenu, we shouldn't repeat the mistake. And we should use it as a means to prepare for Geula. El anakir saramosim le'ela, v'nerchos be'ora, v'ashubit shuba gemura. Don't make the same mistake. And unfortunately, a lot of Jews are still making the same mistake. They have an easy time in America, an easy time perhaps here, and they're using it to assimilate, not to prepare for Geula. That's how he sees. He says it was the assimilation, but more than that, it was the using of the potential, not to assimilate, but to use that easiness of the Goyim lessening their load on us in a positive way, and instead of using it in a positive way, using it to be able to assimilate in a negative way.